Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a really interesting guest for us today. This is from a listener-requested topic, and we are being joined by Marlene Weiss from International Pet Escort Service. Marlene, you're in Austria, correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And we had listeners request the topic of import, export, how to ship a dog to, from, all of these sort of questions. And you were recommended by one of our listeners as a great resource on this topic. So welcome. I'm super excited for you to join us.
Thank you so much for inviting me and having me. I feel honored to be here.
Hey, we're going to have fun. So let's start with the basic overview. Give me an overview of shipping, importing, and exporting an animal. I want to improve my breeding stock, and I have a dog in Germany that I just have to get to the United States. Or somebody from another country overseas wants to purchase one of my dogs.
So your number one is always time. You want to start the process as early as possible. Now, I do understand a lot of people don't want to or can't pick and choose a puppy until they're 8 weeks old. So the rule of thumb is the earliest you can import a dog from most European countries to the United States is 4 months. And at that point, they have to have a microchip and a valid rabies vaccination, which means 30 days from the time of being vaccinated. And prior to that, the microchip has to be implanted already. So that's the basic. They do have to have a European pet passport. Sounds really fancy. Every European country issues this when a puppy is microchipped. At the bottom line, it's only a shot record. Let's just face it.
Okay. Well, no, that's good. I mean, this is why we're talking to you, because it sounds scary to us. We're like, you know.
No, it's really easy. The European pet passports in Europe, when you have an FCI registered dog, they have to have one. So that's a part of when a breeder here in Europe gets a dog ready to be sold or kept or whatever. So they shouldn't be charging you extra for that, just as an FYI.
Okay, good. Good to know.
And international travel is always pricey. Let's just put it this way. I know it can be scary. It's overwhelming. You always want to have, obviously, when your pet is traveling, any shot records, vet records, anything you can get off of your puppy. Now, I always recommend worming. For a dog to come into the United States, all you need, let's say from Germany, is the rabies vaccination, a microchip, and the European pet passport. That's all. So it's really easy at the end of the day. However, flights, let's say it's a German Schnauzer, 4 months old, it won't be able to travel in cabin with me anymore, so we'll have to travel in hold. Now, there's a big difference if you send a dog in hold with a person traveling, or if you send a dog or ship it by itself as cargo.
Right.
Both times, yes, the dog is in a crate. At both times, it's in the compartment, pressurized and dim lighting and temperature controlled. But with a person, people actually look after the dog. I have a chance to check on the dog. Let's say there's a delay or something. I can make sure the dog is watered, fed, pottied, whatever, can stretch his legs. Or I pull the dog and we go on to the next flight, just if the layover is too long. If you ship a dog in cargo by itself, yes, it's a lot cheaper. But it's no more or no less as if you're sending a FedEx package. So the dog is in that crate from the time you drop it off to the time you pick it up. So there is no stretching legs. Yes, they say they'll water and whatever, but no, there is no service on this.
This is part of your service, is you will fly with the dogs versus having the dog fly cargo. And let's just be straight up. What is the cost? I'm going to fly a German wire-haired pointer, 4-month-old, from Germany to the United States with you and or without you. Let's say, what does this cost?
Generally speaking, if I have a heads-up notice from 4 to 6 weeks, and I also ask, please specify where in the United States.
To the West Coast. You're going to fly to Portland or somewhere on the West Coast.
Okay, so the main thing I tell my clients is major airports are always the easiest. Flying out of, let's say, Frankfurt or Vienna, a major airport in Europe and a major airport in the US. Now, Portland, Oregon is a little bit tricky, but it can be done. 9 times out of 10, I will offer Seattle. For a dog that size with me, you're looking into not including the crate or the health certificates, et cetera, which health certificates in this case means the European pet passport and all the paperwork. I would say you're looking at roughly $2,000.
That's for you to fly it.
That's for me to fly it, not including the crate.
Okay.
Now, if you opt to have the dog shipped by itself, meaning you drop it off and you pick it up, pay the customs, you have all the other extra fees you still get upon arrival. It's a customs broker you will have to hire. Sometimes the airlines offer it and whatnot. You're looking probably at half the price.
Okay. I'm just trying to give people a ballpark, right? Like, what is it that is the price break? And these are the differences. If you're importing or exporting, I'm still going to have to do basically all the same paperwork, whether you fly with the dog or don't. Is that correct?
That is very correct. Yes. And it also depends on which time of the year. Let's say now prior Christmas, the prices are unfortunately up just because the ticket prices are higher, or there's not space on the routes and I have to go a different route. And also keep in mind, you cannot take every airline for every breed. You cannot go through certain airports. It's not just, oh, I'll just buy a ticket. I find a ticket through London, for example. And if you want to have your dog pet in cabin, which is with me in the cabin, I can't go through London. It may be the cheapest ticket, but I won't get with me.
Okay, that's interesting. So how about do's and don'ts, right? So what should I definitely do? What should I never do?
Please don't feed your dog before you ship it. It's okay to feed it a couple hours earlier because usually I meet the clients at the airport. I usually walk them again. Sometimes the clients already have them walked and pottied. Don't feed them like short before, especially adult dogs. They will be okay for 8 hours without food. So sometimes accidents happen. It is what it is. They're dogs. Mm-hmm. They're nervous. It's new. Have them used to a crate,
yes.
Especially puppies. If they're not used to a crate, it's a lot more stressful than if they know a crate, they've been in it, you know, it's new surroundings. It can be a disaster.
We were talking about those funny stories. Yeah.
Well, I've had good and bad ones. I mean, good ones were, I was on a flight from Frankfurt to, I can't remember which city in the US, and it was an almost empty flight. The dog was down in the hold. It was about a knee-high Cocker Spaniel, something like that. And I boarded, and the flight attendant and I had my Sherpa bag with me just because I knew on the way back I had a dog in cabin with me. And they asked me, well, where's your dog? And I'm like, well, it's in hold. It's a too large dog for in cabin. But the next thing I know, it's the pilot standing in front of me. I'm like, did you pay for your dog? And I'm like, well, yes, I did. Well, I was like, can I see the ticket? And I showed him the ticket. And he looks at me and he's like, well, do you have a collar and a leash? And I'm like, yes, I do. And the next thing I know is they're loading the dog upstairs and I have to be in cabin, which usually is only allowed for service dogs. I felt very honored. I mean, that happens very rarely, but I was really happy.
Yeah.
So in other times, it's just you run into a lot of bureaucratic stuff, especially at airports with new veterinarians. I always tell them, I really don't mean to come across rude, but I know a lot of the rules and regulations, and I've worked for an airline in the past, so I have all their memos, and I know what they're allowed to do. And if you have a transit for 3 hours, they've seen you with the dog, and it's 10 minutes prior boarding, and then suddenly they think, oh, the crate's too small, because they want to take some luggage or extra mail, you know, on that flight. So to get back to your question on what to do and not to do is I do like to open up a three-way chat with the breeder or the seller and the new owner. So we're all on the same page, especially if I do it on Facebook, because it's very important that I know exactly what's the date of birth, what's the weight. Just be clear and frank with me. You know, if you tell me, oh, it's only 10 kilos and I see you at the airport and it's a 20-kilo dog.
It's not going to be very useful.
Yeah. So ask questions. If you don't know, if you're unsure, I'd rather have you ask a gazillion questions at 3 o'clock in the morning. Just call me or message me. I won't get back to you right away, but as soon as I can.
Right. And I think, as you say, always best to be over-informed than under-informed.
Yes.
Absolutely. So now do you go other than Europe? Do you go any of the Asian countries, Russia, anything like that?
Well, with Russia at the moment, not so much because you need a special visa and mine ran out, so I haven't renewed it. But I do work with one or two very reliable and escorts. And this is another thing I need to tell every client, even if you don't use me because you think I'm too expensive, check references, talk with people. Make sure you're covering your bases on where are you sending your money to, what kind of experience other people have, because unfortunately, the demand is very high. There are a lot of scams out there. There are a lot of people who like, oh, this is easy. I'll just travel with a pet. And I've had people contact me, get an inquiry, get a quote. They turned me down, which is okay. And then a couple of weeks later, they call me. Oh my gosh, can you please help me? My dog is stranded in, I don't know, New York.
Oh no.
The pet escort was not able to enter the U.S. and they just left the dog there.
Oh no.
And I get it. People want a bargain. I totally understand it. However, on international travel with pets, you don't want to go cheap. You want to use the safest airline. You want to use the person with the most experience and the most feedback or references. That's why on my Facebook group, I ask all my clients, please just leave a note. Everybody can contact previous clients. I'm an open book. Because at the end of the day, it is a lot of money sending to somebody they don't know to ship their dog, and they don't know the breeder. So I have a lot of repeat clients. I mean, I just get referred to, and that's how I started out. I mean, people just referred me because like, she's trustworthy. She will make sure you get the dog and she won't just take your money and not bring the dog, you know?
Well, and it's money, but it's also your dog, right? Like, I mean, you know, I'm sorry. I'm going to give some stranger my child that I bred that I'm like, nah,
exactly.
Yeah. I don't know you.
It does help that I show and breed dogs as well, so people know me. So that's maybe a big plus. So especially with handlers, they know who I am. So it falls back on me if I screw up.
Well, but that's good. You're one of our own, right? And you have Boston Terriers, yeah?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
That's what I thought. All right, good.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those
right.
deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in
mm-hmm.
for your monthly payment. And those range from zero to 1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
So which countries do you find the easiest to work with and which do you find the most difficult?
Well, the easiest are those where, for example, coming from the U.S. back to Europe, there are a few where you can, for example, import a dog without a rabies vaccination, older than the age of 8 weeks, but younger than 12 weeks before they can have their rabies vaccination. So that, for example, would be Austria. So Germany, interestingly, although we have the same language and it's just right next to us, and that country, you need the rabies vaccination and 4 months of age. So generally speaking, from the U.S. to Europe, it's really easy. Coming from Europe to the U.S., Italy is okay, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, and Poland. However, if you go down to, for example, the former Yugoslavian countries like Serbia, Montenegro, you will need a titer test. And what's happening right now is, of course, every country, being that we don't have the same currency and the same income, let's say dogs from Russia are cheaper than dogs from Germany. So a lot of Americans are buying Russian dogs or Serbian dogs and don't realize that there's a lot of different paperwork. It's not just like you can get the puppy at 8 weeks. Or also, Russia is a big country, so it's a difference if you get a dog from Moscow or from Samara or somewhere
else. Right.
It's sometimes a little bit frustrating when they expect to get a dog for $1,000 from Europe to the U.S. Because within the U.S., I think you can ship a dog for really cheap. A
couple hundred dollars, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it, how far these dogs are traveling, $1,000 is not even going to cover the flight ticket. It's not even the crate and it's not the paperwork. And then what happens, they go to not as reputable people or airlines which have had issues in the past or sent the dog in cargo. And then they're surprised because of temperature drops. They can't take the dog. The dog is held up for days at a certain location, or they just put it in quarantine. It just happened a couple of months ago. There was a quarantine in Frankfurt for dogs being shipped by themselves because there was some outbreak. And they were just holding all the dogs at the airport and not shipping it. Which is, again, a different location where dogs being shipped by themselves versus dogs being shipped with passengers.
Got it. Okay. So definite advantages for that, for sure. And then you are a breeder, you're a handler, you know people all across Europe,
yes,
just like we know people all across the U.S. So again, someone calls me up from somewhere and says, I want to import one of your dogs and I don't know this person. Or I call someone in Europe and they don't know me. So are you able to offer some insight on that, or do you stay away from that level of discussion?
It depends. Within my breed, I do have people contact me and ask me, hey, do you know this person? Is it a good breeder? Or do you know the person who's buying? Have you had dealt with them? So I do help with the Boston Terriers. With other breeds, it depends. I mean, I know a lot of people, and then I just ask a handler, I'm like, or maybe another breeder. But generally speaking, I like to stay out of that because it's not my business deal. I don't want to know how much the dogs cost. I don't want to know what deals you have. What I do tell people, though, it is a language barrier a lot. So sometimes Europeans, they ask me, hey, can you please be the translator? And I'll do that. That's not a big deal. But negotiations, not my thing.
Well, that's good. And I think it's important for people to understand what are the parameters, right? What am I buying when I get this, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I won't evaluate a dog when I see it. It's because I just don't know the breed. It's not me. You know, I can tell you maybe on a Boston Terrier, but not even then. You know?
Right. So as you're getting through this process, and whether you've chosen to use you or you've chosen to use another escort or you've chosen to go cargo, think of some of your big red flags. What's going to be a problem?
The biggest red flag is not communication from the breeder. Let's say you're buying the dog and it takes forever to get, let's say, the microchip numbers, or they want you to send money without a contract. I mean, sometimes Western Union has to be done, just because if you want the dog being shipped next week, Friday, and it's Thursday now, for an international transaction by bank, it usually takes a week. So especially if I need to fill the spot now, if I need to make sure, tell the airline, yes, we're going. They're not going to say, oh, we'll hold it for you for free until next week. They won't. So sometimes it's Western Union or wire transfer with money. Now, I tell people, if you do that, make sure you're definitely sure you have your references and that it's not a newcomer, or that you do it without a purchase contract for the dog. Also ask them a lot about pedigrees, which pedigree you're going to be getting. Because sometimes, as in the U.S., you know, there's AKC. Here we have the FCI. Make sure you have that. And if you don't know, just ask me. because I also can double check with the kennel clubs if everything's okay on that dog.
Good to know.
Because you don't want to end up spending all that money and then have a dog without
people. No, that would be bad.
And if you've heard from, let's say, previous clients or people who have bought from that kennel that there were issues with the puppies, let's say being sick. And that's another thing. When I see the puppy at the airport and I feel like, let's say it's wormy or something's off, it's a really tough decision. But I will message you and say, you know what? This puppy does not look right. Injured, sores or snotty, diarrhea, whatever. But the problem at the same time with that is once we pay the airlines and tell them, yes, we're on that flight, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to refund a whole bunch. So you want to make sure you buy from a reputable breeder, you know, and talk to people, especially in this day and age with Facebook. Everybody's connected somehow. So ask around.
Good. I like that. So any other important suggestions for people either importing or exporting?
Well, make sure you start ahead of time. For international travel, if you can get 4 to 6 weeks ahead of time, knowing that, you know, let's say the puppy's 6 or 7 weeks old and you know you want to have it, just start looking around who you want to help you or just start the process. It's really interesting at times because, let's put it this way, American breeders, like going from the U.S. back to Europe. As we mentioned before, there are different countries, you need different rules and regulations, but the basic is always the international microchip, which is an ISO microchip, not the regular one you can get. I think it's like an 8 or 10 digit, but the ISO microchip is a 12 digit.
Right.
So that's the one you need to have. So if you already have a different one, you can run into problems because they have different readers here.
That's a really great point that I had forgotten about. Yes, the international microchip. Can you put an ISO microchip in a dog that already has like a home again or whatever?
You can, and you should, because if the dog remains in Europe, it will need an ISO microchip. And I think, generally speaking, for breeders in the U.S. who want to have international or know there's a dog going to be going to Europe or where else, right, you know, Canada, might as well just chip them with the ISO microchip. It costs like maybe $1 more or maybe $2 more per microchip. And then you don't have to worry about re-chipping a dog.
That's really good. That's good information.
And then also people get, especially when people buy dogs from the U.S. back to Europe, they get overwhelmed with the USDA paperwork. It is a lot. And if you don't know what you're doing or what you're looking for, it can be super overwhelming. What I do in that case scenario, I already have all the files and I know which country needs which paperwork and what. And so I just send them the forms and I tell them, you go with those forms on that day, you go to your vet. You have him fill that out. If he has any questions, just call the USDA office or contact me. Just have him stamp and sign it, send it off to the USDA office. They'll validate it. And if something's off, you know, they'll call your vet and make sure everything's correct. And then they'll overnight it back to the breeder or the vet, depending on what you choose. And it's this USDA paperwork is no different than what we have with the European pet passport. So once you have that European pet passport, which is a shots record, you can travel back and forth to the U.S. You won't need anything else ever again, unless a stamp in the back or a vet certificate stating that the dog is healthy to travel to its destination. If the dog doesn't have that, you always have to go through the USDA forms.
So the USDA forms to ship overseas, the dog does not actually have to be examined by a USDA vet.
No, you will have to take the dog to your regular vet. He will scan the microchip and make sure that that is, in fact, the dog is filling out the paperwork. At that time, the dog already has to have his rabies vaccination. So then he fills out everything, you know, where is it going to? And a lot of times people ask me, well, I need to put your information down there. I'm like, no, not me. I'm not the owner. The new owner needs to go on those forms. I just have the separate form that I'm allowed to travel with the dog to its destination, a consent from the breeder or from the owner. And that's also a separate form. And then he or she just mails it over to the USDA office and they just double check. So the only thing you really do at your vet with the dog prior to shipping to Europe is that the vet confirms that this dog, in fact, has a rabies vaccination. And as oddly as it sounds, because in this day and age, I'm more worried about other illnesses than rabies because
right,
we really don't have the problem. That for Europe, 9 times out of 10 is all you need.
Interesting. So you deal primarily with Europe. You don't necessarily, like I was going through a process to ship a dog to Australia, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Australia is a whole different ballpark.
Right. That's what I just wanted to make sure my experience was not unusual.
No, it's very difficult to ship to Australia. You have a lot of rules and regulations. They can only go by cargo. You can do it, but I wouldn't be able to do it from the US. I could do it if the dog were located in Austria, because it has to be in Austria for a certain time before it can be shipped over, but it has to travel by itself on that one.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, this has been super valuable and fascinating. And I love the information, listeners. We'll provide you with some links and some contacts. And Marlene, anything else you want to just make sure everybody knows?
Well, if you need any help, contact me.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Marlene. I sure appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it too.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Welcome, Allison.
Welcome, Laura. How are you today?
I am wonderful. And we are talking about feet, clippering feet, scissoring feet, making sure that dogs have clean feet.
Yes, of course. So, you know, as a poodle person, my dog's feet are always clipped by the time they get to the dog show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have had a couple people write in and ask me different questions about their dogs and their breeds. And, you know, I think no matter what breed you're showing, your dog is going to be at an advantage for the most part if they have in between their pads under their feet clippered out or scissored out. So you mm-hmm. want to use maybe a number 10 blade or some short blunt nose scissors. And just get as much hair from in between the pads out as possible. This does a couple things. First of all, there's going to be less hair in there for dirt, debris, etc. to get in. So there's going to be no matting happening in there. Because once you get an excess buildup of mud or mats or hair, sometimes that can cause your dog to actually have worse feet. Like it can make them splay footed.
Right. And it's winter. So the less hair in between the pads, already we're ahead of the game, right? Less hair means less mud in our house.
Exactly. And so also this is going to make the foot look neater and tidier. It's going to be easier to trim the top of the foot if the bottom of the foot is being taken care of. And then, of course, when your dog's in the show ring, they're not going to be slipping, you know, stepping on that hair that's just automatically mm-hmm. underneath their feet and slipping. It's going to be easier for them to not slip in the show ring.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, we do have a couple breeds where trimming of the feet is really, really discouraged, and some people are just downright hysterical about it, which I'm not saying that in a bad way. I don't blame them if that's something
right.
they believe in. I get it. So for those breeds, maybe Tibetan Terriers, Cavaliers, you know, I've had owners and people just ask me not to trim the hair out from between the pads. But I always ask if it's okay if I just trim the hair even with the pad so that the hair isn't coming out from in between the pads and then just curling over and covering up all or part of the pad of the foot of the dog. And most people think that this is okay. And in that way, we're still making sure that our dog isn't slipping on that hair when they're going around the ring.
Right. Well, you're honoring the standard and the lack of trimming, but you're going with sanitary and safe.
Exactly. And the biggest thing is to be safe. You know, you see people and their dogs are going around the ring and they say, you know, my dog's really nervous when I show it inside, outside is much better. Well, it's because there's so much hair on the bottom of their feet that every time they step off the mat, out a corner, you know, they're slipping on that hair on their foot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where your lack of effort is just causing you more pain in the long run.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, listeners, thank you so much, Allison. Don't forget, listeners, we have the Pure Dog Talk 25 checkout code when you go to sign up for your Leading Edge Dog Show Academy subscription. And I know Allison has some cool new courses, right?
Yes, we have Setters and Spaniels coming up. We have our whole school subscription. We're adding a lot more content, and we're so excited to have everybody join our school.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us, Allison. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura. Have a good day.
You do too. And now a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. ADF says, always qualify any statistics that you're using in an advertisement. Date and the system are the best way to do that. Second note, always remember to include photo credits. Thank you from American Dog Fancier, affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.